right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Good evening. Hello there. Big thanks to Demi and Mikey for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, October 9th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Alan Colley joins us to chat football about International and League of Ireland, and we'll hear from Ireland's Finn Azaz. Bernard Jackman chats URC ahead of this weekend's action, while Jeff Shepherd has the latest NFL news. Plus, we'll round up today's sports headlines. And if you want to have your say, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200 or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. It is great to have your company. I am in the company of Bernard Jackman and Alan Colley. Bernard, how's the form?
Keep good, on. Thank you. Yeah, all good.
Yeah, very, very well. Very well. Alan?
I'm great, Shane. Thank you. All is well.
You're going to bring some positivity that was lacking on our football chat yesterday, apparently.
I was going to ring Keith Tracy last night and say, Keith, are you okay? No, he was,
he was a realist.
Oh no, I'm all for a realist. I love that, and I love that about Keith. But I'd give them a glimmer of hope Saturday night.
I don't know. I know football isn't your number one sport, Bernard. But
not gonna cast.
You're not gonna row in it. Right, we shall see. You're off to Cork tomorrow, though, Alan Colley.
Yeah,
the under-21s. There's a bit more positivity emanating from.
Yeah, and to be fair, the last couple of campaigns, there's been a lot of positivity around that. But it's a new group, Shane. Probably not as strong as the last couple of groups that Jim has had. So I think it'll be a tougher task. And obviously England are in the group as well. So it will be a tougher task. And the first couple of games that they've played, even though we've got off to winning start in the campaign, the two games were a bit of a struggle. Away to Moldova, which is obviously difficult. It was a dry pitch, warm evening. So it was the first time that those lads played together as well. Made hard work of it, but Melia scored two. And then probably the more surprising one, at home to Andorra the last night. Andorra were very, very good. Like, when would we ever hear us saying that about Andorra? But they were very good. But we got the victory anyway in the end. So plenty to build on, but I don't think this group is as strong. Now, maybe over time they will get better when they start playing a lot more together. But just in terms of maybe the talent that Jim has had at his disposal the last couple of campaigns, which has brought us very, very close to qualifying, I think this will be a little bit more of a struggle.
Okay, we're going to return to football very shortly. We're going to begin with rugby before we speak to Bernard, though. A couple of news headlines. Dublin's seven-time All-Ireland Senior Football Championship winner John Small has announced his retirement from inter-county football. The 32-year-old Ballymun Kickham's man was part of the Dublin panel for 11 trophy-laden seasons. Small played his part in the Dubs six in a row. He also claimed 10 Leinster titles, 4 league titles and 1 All-Star in 2020. And another retirement. Wexford captain Kylie Murphy will make her final appearance for the club in their concluding game of the SSC Electricity Women's Premier Division season against Cork City at Ferry Carrick Park on Saturday after calling time in her career. The 37-year-old Carlow native has been at Wexford for her entire senior career, winning 4 league titles and 4 FAI Women's Cups. In that time, the versatile midfielder and forward has scored 123 goals in 331 appearances. This season, she captained Wexford to glory in the Avenir Sports All-Ireland Cup as they beat Bowes and penalties in the final in August.
Game on.
Rugby.
But we are chatting rugby now. Bernard Jackman. Edwin Adogba will make his long-awaited return from injury for Munster in tomorrow night's URC match with Edinburgh. The 22-year-old second row hasn't played since suffering a torn Achilles on St Stephen's Day 2023, but has been named on the bench by head coach Clayton McMillan for his first appearance in more than 21 months. McMillan has made 10 changes to his starting team from last week's win against Cardiff and has changed his entire backline for Friday night's game in Cork. Just firstly, on the return of Edwin, how good is that to see? How heartening is it for Irish rugby fans to see
that? Yeah, look, he's the poor guy. He's had a horrific
fantastic time with Achilles tendon injuries. He's someone that everyone in Munster who's worked with him speaks incredibly highly. I'm very excited. Profile, a different type of physical profile than most of the locks that we have, or certainly Munster have. So I think they've been really patient with him, just trying to make sure he comes back and can stay back. And tomorrow night's another step towards that. But he is an exciting player, very explosive, very physical. Yeah, and hopefully he gets a run of games now where he can show how good he is.
How excited have you been with this Clayton McMillan Munster?
I'm a big fan of Clayton McMillan, and a lot of my friends who worked with him in New Zealand said he's going to come over here and have a big impact like he did in the Waikato Chiefs. It hasn't been perfect. Ironically, the first game against Scarlets away was a better performance than last week, but 2 from 2. Likelihood of being 3 from 3 tomorrow night, you would guess. And Munster over the last 4 or 5 years have had really bad starts, slow starts, and have had to chase points and wins later on in the season. So I think getting the feel-good factor from getting some wins under a new coach, getting that bedded in, but also being up the top end of the table early doors with a trip to Leinster and Croke Park next week is be a very positive start for them.
Well, let's hear from a man who kicked a very important drop goal for them last week, Jack Crowley, speaking to the media.
What did Clayton say to you in the dressing room after? He indicated to the media maybe that he needed to see a bit more edge, or wanted to see a bit more edge from you guys. Is that how he put it across after the match?
Well, I won't give away what messages we talk about in the dressing room, but certainly as a collective, we'd hope to be a little bit more physical. And certainly we didn't deliver to our own standards, we felt, in the game. So something as a group that we'll be driving and hopefully deliver on further down the line.
Then how satisfying is it as an half to be put in that position towards the end of a game and to, you know, I suppose have the clarity alongside your teammates to know that that's the right option, and then, you know, the execution to get it over the bar, minimal of fuss, that must be for an out half, you know, a satisfying play.
Again, probably like we kind of got to a situation where we were playing off slow ball, so reviewing that, probably looking at how we can be a little bit better and play with a little bit more tempo and get a little bit more flow in our attack, particularly in that passage of play. But yeah, look, it wasn't really anything we discussed. It's just the situation that we arised in. Like I said, momentum we didn't really have in that passage of play, and we'll try and look at it and see how we can be better in those scenarios to find a way back into our game. But yeah, look, it was just a scenario that came about, and we took it and we're able to fight another day, I guess.
Just a couple of more rounds until the international break. How much of your determination to get back as first choice for Ireland, how much of that informs your preparation for the week?
I'm being brutally honest, I don't think it would be respectful to the group for that to be a driving factor for me. I don't think it would be fair to the rest of the lads. And also, my main focus is how I can best prepare the team and myself for the opponent that's coming up the week. You know, like this week now, it's Edinburgh, how we can best prepare for that and how we can get the best out of ourselves, how I can get the best out of myself. And, you know, if we start looking down the line, then that's where we won't be able to deliver in performances. And yeah, I don't think it would be, for me anyway, placing my energy in the right areas.
Jack Crowley speaking to our own Michael Glennon there. Now, Clayton McMillan has confirmed that Jack Crowley, player of the match last week, was not considered this week due to the IRFU's player management system. Is that good news for fans that want to see Jack and Sam Prendergast square off at Croke Park?
Well, we know if we see Leinster's team tomorrow night. I think Jack will play against Leinster. He subbed against Scarlets, came on at half time. Obviously played a full game last week, off this week. You'd imagine he'd play next week. Prendergast started the 2 games, played 80 minutes in round 1, round 2. So if he plays on Saturday, I think it's unlikely he will play next week. I'd love them to go head-to-head. I think that would add to the occasion. And fans deserve that, to see the two of them go head-to-head. And probably for both of them, they'd relish that opportunity to lay down a final marker before they head off to Chicago. Both of them will be going to Chicago. It was interesting, the RFU announced today just a timeline for the November International. So they're announcing the squad on the 15th, which is next Wednesday. Obviously, Leinster play Munster next Saturday. And then on the Monday they assemble, and they go to, and the following Monday they go to Chicago on the Tuesday. So effectively they're not available for round five of the URC. So I think for Andy Farrell the challenge for to play the All Blacks is the All Blacks are coming off a rugby championship, so they're battle hardened. The mainline players for Ireland who were British and Irish lines, they're only starting to filter in this week. Some of them play this week and some will play next week. Some may end up playing two games in a row, but some will end up going to play the All Blacks on the basis of one game or potentially no games.
How concerning is that for you?
Yeah, it's not ideal. Like even so, even historically, there always would have been around two rounds of Europe before November International. And Europe is a kind of in betweener between the URC and Test Rugby. So look, these lads are fit and all that stuff, but
you can't be going through their own mini
Shane,
go on. Would they be going through a little bit of a pre-season?
Look, they'll be well tuned, and everybody's on a different timeline and they know how to get people back. But like historically, Ireland and New Zealand and South Africa, they all like games. They all like minimum games going into a big series of games. And the fact that we have South Africa, Australia and New Zealand in November, it's a very strange prep. For, look, it needs most lines tour, so many Irish players, etc. But I think, and even the Connacht example, so Connacht's game last week was postponed, right? So Stuart Lancaster's going to have to pick the same 23 again because they didn't get to play. And I would argue, or I would predict that the plan was for Bundiaki, MacHanson or Finlay Beenham or all three to play this week for Connacht. Now they effectively can't because the same team goes again. So sometimes...
Does the same team have to go again, though?
I think for it'd be very hard on the guys who are getting their chance, you know. It's just one of those things. It wasn't predicted.
But is there not a bigger picture here at that we need guys ready for Ireland as opposed to giving a few guys a chance in the URC for Connacht?
Potentially, but I think that's a hard conversation for Andy Farrell to have to Stuart Lancaster. I think the conversation between Andy Farrell and Stuart Lancaster is relatively easy. The hard conversation is Stuart Lancaster to the player that he's
after
new,
just in the door.
He's new, you know. It's all about taking your opportunities. All about earning the opportunity. They've all had a good preseason prepping for round one, round two, round three. Whereas the internationals have been kind of on a different schedule. So I think, look, it's not ideal, but I think you're better off having the provinces and the player head coach relationship being sounder than risking something just for international demands.
Wasn't Joe Joyce now saying he's relearning rugby?
That's right.
Good sounding.
All the feedback from Connacht has been from the very first day, from the day he was announced. I think the second day he went down and did press, and I think he's bringing people with him. He's bringing the players with him, but he's bringing fans with him. And it's amazing the effect the coach can have over an off season without massive signings. I think people in Connacht are much more positive about where they're going.
So, will the match respondents for both Connacht and Ulster cause them a lot larger headache than a casual fan might think? It's a week off, we just plan again, go again. Like, how will that affect the provinces?
Yeah, look, it was easier for Connacht because they were at home, so they weren't travelling. The Scarlets obviously had a nightmare, spent 7 or 8 hours on a plane on Friday and didn't get to where they wanted to go to. So Connacht actually did a training session in the end once they realised, you know, on Saturday morning. So they'll be less taken out of their stride, but it's not ideal. Yeah, those games have to be played, still have to find a fixture for them. And I think Connacht had two home games to start, and they would have fancied their chances of beating the Scarlets. Then, so to have those wins and points on the board when other teams are bringing internationals back was something they definitely targeted. Now they got to go to Cardiff tomorrow night, who we saw in Thomond Park look like a good side, and they rested players in Thomond Park. So that game in Cardiff isn't a guarantee for win for Connacht by any manner of means.
Okay, since we're talking about the two teams that had matches postponed, so it's going to be a tough test for Connacht. Ulster against the Bulls, they'll be fresh or will they be a bit rusty?
Yeah, Ulster played a very soft fixture the first round against Dragons and got 5 points, but there was elements of their attack that looked to be far more intricate, far more well organised than they were last year. I think that's the Mark Sexton effect. The Bulls have had two bonus point wins, racked up a lot of points for attack, but also took 40 points against the Ospreys, and Leinster scored over 30. So defensively they look weak. They're travelling this week. I think Ulster can get a good win there.
Okay, if we circle back to Munster Edinburgh, just on the match itself then, former Munster out half Ben Healy starts for the visitors, couple of lines featuring for Edinburgh as well. How tough of a test will this be for Munster?
I don't think Edinburgh are a great side, to be honest. I think Munster with likes of Haley back, Calvin Nash, Tom Farrell is back, Jade Johanneran is a brilliant backup to Jack Crowley. That pack with John Klein, Gavin Coombs. No, I would expect Munster. I think Munster will be way better than they were last week. And the 4G pitch will suit them the way they want to play. And they'll get that hard edge that McMillan spoke about after the game. That'll be back, and I think they'll do a good job in Edinburgh.
Okay, 35 players have been selected in matchday squads over the first three games of the season for Munster.
Yeah, because that's good. There's been some injuries. They had, but also McMillan and Stuart Lancaster, the two new coaches, will want to give everyone a fair crack in the first three rounds that are fit, and then start to narrow down your selections from there.
Okay, Leinster are two defeats from two matches. Let's hear from James Lowe now.
Yeah, we normally only lose a couple in the old regular season, so to get them out of the way first isn't good now, is it? Look, obviously the boys, they're just back in the building. Obviously very disappointing last couple of weeks, but I think there's a few boys hopefully coming back into the mix, and going forward we can, you know, help them out. We'll give them a cuddle for a couple of days, but then after that it's business as usual. There'll be a fair few more South Africans lining up. There's a bit of blood in the water, so... hopefully we can turn it around and put in a performance at home that we're really happy with, and it can set us right for the rest of this competition. Look, it's that first game was incredibly disappointing against a very good Saumas team. It's tough to go over there, you know, and we had came up against two very good sides, and you know, at the end of the day, it's a physical game, and if you don't turn up for it, that can happen to you. I think it was a massive step up in that Bulls game. Fair play. I mean, we were in it right until the end. The most disappointing thing was probably the ease of how the tries came, the ease of how we conceded points. But, you know, there's still a lot of growth in that area. Once we get back to how we defend, I think teams are really going to struggle, and hopefully we can take a step in the right direction this weekend. Well, we need a performance. I think everyone expects that. I don't think anyone expected us to come back from South Africa only having 1 point. I don't think anyone expected us to concede 35 and not score any points in that first game. And yes, I guess a performance is always what you're chasing, but yeah, a few things need to change. And I think hopefully come this weekend we can do that.
Just the last one for me. Have you trained yet or had a team meeting?
Yeah, we've been training the whole time, mate. The boys have been bloody in South Africa. Boys been in South Africa getting tans, mate. We've been here, all hands on deck, running into each other, making sure get used to another man running into you. So look, we're primed and ready to rumble here.
James Lowe speaking to Michael Glennon there of RT and the assembled media. Bernard Jackman, how concerned should Leinster fans be with two defeats from two matches?
Not concerned at all. Honestly, it's just. They've never gone to South Africa that early, missing more players than ever. And I think they'll take a lot of satisfaction from the bit of character and reaction they showed in the second week. The Stormers game was very unusual for Leinster to be just so completely outplayed in all areas of the game, but they showed enough against the Bulls that I think Leo Cullen will be happy with some of those young players coming into form. And this week we'll see how many. The fact that James Lowe was put for press, so potentially he's obviously going to be involved. You start putting some of those British and Irish lines into that team, and the fact that they're playing a Sharks side who were, you know, drew with Dragons last week, they certainly don't play to the sum of their parts. And I think you'll get a big win, 5 points, and by Christmas Leinster will be back up in the top two or three.
Okay, if they lose on Saturday, that's when
that would be it. That would be
not that they should.
But that would be then you have to start asking questions. But no, I think they went to South Africa with a young squad. They may have even seen it as being a bit of an extended pre-season in terms of their tapering off, and you'll start to see wins. Now there's no guarantee it'll be Munster next week, but Saturday I expect them to win.
Okay. Before we let you go, Bernard, we mentioned this earlier in the week, actually, this unified approach from many international unions against this new movement, or 360. Was it expected that this would be that massive pushback against it?
The ace that the unions have is international rugby. Mm. Players will not want to lose out in international rugby. And obviously, our 360's play is you can do both. But the problem for the unions, the IRFU, the RFU, the NZRU, if you allow your best players go play R360 and play test rugby, what happens? The Auckland Blues, Leinster, Saracens, etc., they, like, fans will not buy season tickets to go see substandard sides play for the knockout stages. So it's predictable. Now I think the R360's role, our next task, is to try and get players to unify and say, well, we won't play international rugby and call their bluff. But
will that happen?
I don't think. What players want to put their head above water? It's like the lads in LIV Golf. And it's not the same type of money as LIV Golf either. It's good, better contracts, but it's not. Bar Antoine Dupont, I don't think any of the contracts are over €1 million.
Okay.
And like Antoine Dupont can make $1 million without the R360, you know. But I think if he went out and said, I don't want to play for France anymore, or I'm willing to risk it, his commercial value would drop a lot as well.
Okay, good stuff. Just to confirm those URC fixtures, tomorrow night, 7:45 kickoff, Munster against Edinburgh. Saturday then, Leinster at home to the Sharks, 5:30 for that one. And Cardiff host Connacht, 7:45, and at the same time, Ulster play the Bulls. Bernie Jackman, thank you for your company as always. Alan Colley is with us. We're going to be chatting football after the break.
2FM Breakfast with Carl, Roz and Ashley. If you're into banging tunes and free cash, you'll be all over Tomato Tunes with 2FM Breakfast. We're celebrating Keeling's new sweet cherry on the vine tomatoes. Available now in Tesco stores nationwide. Hear our tomato track, text in and wait for our call. Miss it and you'll be left red-faced. There's €1,000 on the line every morning. Love that Keeling's feeling with 2FM Breakfast all next week from 6. Game on.
Association football.
Now, Alan Colley is with us to chat football, both international and League of Ireland. And we're going to touch on the under-21s as well. They're playing tomorrow in Cork. But first, let's hear from Ireland's senior international, Finn Izaz.
You know, we all know that we've let people down, let ourselves down. And now it's just a case of looking towards the next two games, to put it right. And that's the kind of, that's the feeling right now. There is an anger there to put things right. Like I say, we know it wasn't good enough, and we're feeling like we can really make a statement and put it right. I think stopping lapses in concentration in key moments and managing the games, the mistakes certain times has cost us against Hungary and against Armenia. So definitely eliminating those and making sure that the concentration is there, and then without those mistakes, I think we give ourselves a really, really good chance. I think we've got a lot of quality in the squad, and you can see that at club and when I'm in training, I can see it. So getting that right is kind of fundamental. It really hurt us too, me personally, feeling like we've let a lot of people down, the fans, the staff and ourselves really. So I wouldn't say it's a pressure, I'd say there's that real motivation now to put it right. You look at the table, we can see that there's still, with that draw against Hungary, there's still a great chance, and there's that anger and that motivation to start with Saturday, and then we'll look at the next game. I'd say it even goes kind of further than that, just in terms of the build up, the wins against Bulgaria, improved performances and results leading up to that game. Maybe there was a lack of understanding of the challenge that we were coming up against away to Armenia, in terms of the occasion, in terms of the environment, and in terms of them as players. We weren't at our levels, and I don't want to give like excuses about this and that. We've just got to kind of look at ourselves, and maybe that is a part of it.
I remember when you came in and spoke about short, being and heavy on players, and like maybe a decade next year, you don't qualify, goes on. You're one of the newer lads into the squad. Like, is that hard to break down?
I personally, there's always going to be that expectation and that kind of added pressure of playing for your country. I feel like my role as a creative player, that the manager's kind of given me that that space and that freedom, and I've just wanted to try and bring that creativity. That's all my focus has been on. It hasn't been on, oh, I need to do this, I need to perform. It's been more kind of, how can I help this team create more chances? How can I adapt, have the best impact in this game? That's kind of been my sole focus. I haven't worried too much about the things that you've been saying, and that's because I've had enough experience in football now to kind of understand that and live with that kind of expectation and pressure. I kind of pride myself on being able to adapt within the game. the way that we're going to have to play on Saturday could be different to the way we're going to have to play on Tuesday. That ability to adapt is going to be really, really important.
Ireland's Finn Izaz speaking there. On his comments, Alan, about the lack of understanding of the challenge of Armenia, what do you make of that?
Yeah, they were the ones that stuck out to me as well, Shane, when I saw the press conference earlier on. And the reason they stuck out to me is because it just shouldn't be happening at an international level, because the way I would read that is almost like as if you were underprepared for the challenge that was about to face you, which you should never be, no matter what the opposition is, club level or even more so international level, particularly a game of that importance coming off the back of the 2-2 draw. Now, I'm not sure if that's him saying as a group, did they underestimate Armenia? There's a couple of ways you could look at that, but certainly in terms of the fact of maybe there was a lack of understanding of the challenge we were coming up against, the way to Armenia, because of the performances before that, that shouldn't be happening.
Is that a dig at the management?
Well, you could, as I said, you could look at it two or three ways, but certainly it's almost kind of, I think it's more a dig at the collective kind of group in terms of the players and the management all as one. But that shouldn't be the case. And if he's outlining that in a press conference, maybe it's a bit naive from him, because people will jump all over that like we're discussing it right now. But I don't think that should be the case whatsoever, especially, as I said, we're not a team good enough, Shane, in the first place, to think here we are, we've arrived now, that we can go into any game, even if it's Armenia away. And look what happened when we turned up like that. So no matter who the opposition, I don't think you should underestimate anyone. Everybody deserves the respect, no matter who you're, as I said, club or international level. But even more so, the predicament we find ourselves in. And when you're going out with a lot of optimism, it should be said, before the campaign started, and they got the late goal, so maybe there was a little bit of confidence that should have been there going into the game. But no way should there have been any overconfidence or underestimating the opposition. And if he's basically said that today in the press conference, which he has, that would worry me.
Well, there certainly won't be any lack of understanding of the challenge of Portugal away in a World Cup qualifier. What glimmer of hope do you have when you look at this match?
I think just purely based on previous performances against the big nation, Shane, that's all you can base it on, in the sense that we're at our best when we're the underdog. Nobody's given us a chance. Nobody gives us a prayer in a lot of previous games before as well.
But does this group have the character of those teams that grinded out the big results?
Well, that's the thing we don't know, because they haven't. As I said, I would always look at the evidence that's kind of there in front of you. And the evidence that gives me the glimmer of hope is previous results, as you say. But the evidence that's not there is this group not being able to do it. And in terms of their character, it's been questioned. I think also when you look at the inclusion of Coleman coming back into the squad, John Egan, is there a lack of leadership amongst the group as well? That would point to maybe why he has brought those two back. I definitely think that's an issue in the group as well.
But going into the first group of matches in this campaign, we were all talking about, we have Nathan Collins captaining his side, Darren O'Shea captaining his side. We have these leaders in the group.
I wouldn't say they were leaders, just because they're captains at their club. They're still very young, especially in terms of if you're comparing it to the likes of Seamus Coleman, who has kind of years and years of experience under his belt. I don't think any of them are at that level or have played at the level that Seamus had for a continuous period of time as well. So the likes of Collins, even though he's the captain now, he's been bouncing around clubs for the last 3 or 4 years yet to establish himself. Now hopefully that's the case now that he's at Brentford a couple of seasons and he is the club captain. And if he was to stay there for the next 5-6 years, whatever the case may be, as the club captain, then you'd be putting him in the bracket of maybe what we see Seamus as now. But right now I don't see him as the big kind of and I don't think that's a criticism in Ethan. That's just kind
I'm not saying you are either, but he's made a couple of mistakes. Would you take the captaincy off him for Ireland?
Funny,
so he can just focus on his game.
I had this conversation with someone earlier on, because if you look at it and all the reasons I'm pointing out, that he's still very young in his career, I think it's weighing heavily on him. I really do, Shane. Not just at international level, at club level as well. Like, that's a big burden to carry at both. Now, it's a compliment to him that the both of the managers are prepared to give him that at a young age. But I think it's weighing heavily on him at the moment, and particularly when he comes back playing with us, because we've yet to see the best of him. We have seen glimpses, maybe even more than glimpses, at Brentford in his club career, where he has played very, very well and looks like that platform and that level, Premier League level, is no problem to him. But I've also seen in recent weeks him having some pretty poor games at club level as well. So maybe that's something. Now, how you approach that, I think the only way you get around that is if Seamus starts on Saturday night. Because you don't want to approach it in a way, Shane. It depends on the relationship that the manager has with the player, and that's relatively new. Hal Grimson and Nathan Collins. It's probably only the guts of a year, is it?
As much as I pose the question, it could help him, it could benefit him. That if you take that weight of extra pressure on him, it could also completely the other way and say, I'm not being trusted here, I'm not being backed, and then he goes further down.
And that's where I'm coming from with the point of it depends on how strong that relationship is, because if Heimir Hallgrímsson can sit him down and explain it to him that it's a constructive thing and he accepts that, you could get away with it. But you don't want to frame it like what we see maybe with a Harry Maguire at United, that the captaincy is taken off you. Like, you don't want that, because that will kind of absolutely destroy his confidence going forward, and you don't want that because he is still one of our main players, and I think he will grow into the captaincy. It's just the problem we have now with a lot of those lads is we want it now, and they were building it up going into the campaign, and rightly so, and we were as well, that this is our time, we're ready now.
But this is what we, even during the Stephen Kenny era, we've been building towards this, is blooding players and getting players game time into the national team. And now this was the big one. This was the World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, and maybe it's not their time. Maybe they're not ready. Because what we've seen so far would tell you that they're not. So I was very much of the view that all that kind of heavy lifting was done under Stephen to have maybe 25, 30, 35 caps under their belt now. Now this is the campaign where they're ready to go and try and compete and get ourselves into a bit of a position where we're fighting to qualify. But we're two games in and here we are already, like, with only a point on the board and almost looking kind of down the barrel. So maybe they're not ready, Shane. Maybe they're not. And that might be a strong thing to say at the fact that now, because people would say, well, when are they going to be ready? They have a lot of games under their belt, but they're not standing up to the challenge at the moment.
John O'Shea, we heard from him yesterday, gave a squad update. Evan and Troy are training and they're fit to play. Even if they're not 100%, would you risk both of them against Portugal, or do you look at a view of, geez, Tuesday might even be more important?
Yeah, I would be definitely, especially Troy Parrott. He hasn't played any football. At least Evan has played football, and it was just a niggle or a kick he got last week. So he'll be fine. He'll start, and I would start him away because he has that run of games under his belt now. He's looking fitter and sharper than he has in the last 2 or 3 years. The only thing that's missing from Evan at the moment is a goal, which will come, I'm sure. But Troy Parrott, I think, is one with a view to maybe 20 minutes, half an hour in Portugal, and then you could start him in the game on Tuesday night, whereas you says, like, it's gonna be imperative that we get 3 points on Tuesday night at home to have any chance whatsoever, regardless of what happens on Saturday, to have any chance of keeping our slim hopes alive. We have to win on Tuesday. So I'd be inclined to start Evan on Saturday night, and he'd probably start again on Tuesday night, which is fine, but definitely hold Troy back on Saturday.
Do you truly believe Ireland can still qualify for the World Cup?
No.
No? It's done?
Not so much done in the sense that I think...
Well, it's not mathematically done, I know that. But.
Yeah, but I just can't see it happening, to be honest with you, Shane. I was so disappointed with the Hungary game, like, you know. And I suppose then, maybe, and this is something that maybe we should be looking back on, because I was kind of before the game thinking, we're ready now.
We're
this
all
is
very
it.
Hopeful.
Yeah,
there was
we
a
were.
Lot like, of
and maybe we got
around.
Carried away a little bit with it as well, because you're going off the back of 2 wins against Bulgaria. Like, Bulgaria are an average team as well at the moment. And I know we had the couple of wins against Finland in the Nations League. Like, it's not really... And maybe, as I said, that's where we were getting a bit carried away. And up to now, we've always been very realistic about the chances. And maybe it was just desperation from us that we wanted to see it happen.
We're trying
as well.
To clutch onto
yeah.
something.
Whereas when you look at that... But I just... Because what needs to happen now for us to qualify is you nearly have to be faultless. And this team hasn't been faultless for years, unfortunately.
Keith Tracy was on the show yesterday. He said he'd set up with a 5-3-2, play Evan and Troy up top. Everyone else just has an onus on do not concede, be solid. The wing backs come into play. You're going to have to absolutely run yourself into the ground. How would you set Ireland up on Saturday?
Yeah, well, it's going to be a lot of that backs to the wall, because obviously Portugal, technically, they're so good. Possession-based team. The pattern of the game, we can already see it. They'll have 70% of the ball at least, bare minimum, and we'll be sitting in a low block. So whether that's a 4 or 5, whatever the case may be, Shane. So,
would you start Seamus?
I think I would, yeah. Depending on his fitness, like, obviously the manager will know that.
Well, he might be fit, but he's not going to be match sharp.
No, but of all the things that you can throw at Seamus Coleman, and a fantastic, like, of the, all the plaudits that we have given him, one of his biggest strengths is his professionalism. So the fact that he's not playing matches, he is ready to go. He would not put himself in a position that he's not ready to go, or he would have told the manager, no, I'm not available for these games. Once he's available, he's fit and ready to go, Shane. I would, yeah, because I said it looks like they're lacking a bit of leadership.
Mm.
And he'll give you that. You know, even his presence alone around some of those. Like, I loved Arashe. I'm a big fan of Arashe. I thought he was poor in the last game as well. So maybe Seamus alongside him. Jake O'Brien, to be fair, still very young, thrown into that team. I know he's playing every week at Everton. But the international stage is a different kettle of fish altogether if you're not experienced. And they're not. Those lads are not. You know, so... And he's even probably less experienced than what Nathan and what Dara have built up over time. So I actually think he will start, Seamus.
Do we need to be a bit more nasty, a bit more frustrating? But when you look at the Armenia match, there was times where you think, oh my God, this is just so annoying to play against. A bit more game management. Just, do Ireland have that in them?
Well, that's the thing. These are the things that are being labelled at the players at the moment, which they're not really great things to be labelled at, to be fair. Now, look, that could be just a symptom of the modern day game as well, Shane, where it's not like the olden days where you can just go out and smash into people. You know, you do have to be relatively careful, and the fact that they're all trying to get the ball down and play as well. But I do think we've gone away from a lot of our strengths, and that's been a major hindrance. Thus, us thinking that we're all of a sudden a possession-based team over all the other attributes that we used to have in terms of getting in people's faces and getting up and at them and being a bit more direct. And if it is long throws or corner kicks or whatever the case may be.
But they're the traditional strengths of Ireland. Are they the strengths of this squad?
But that's the thing. I think they can be the strengths of this squad, Shane. But if we have managers who are continuously telling them, or even media or people, that you want to get it down and play, you'll start believing that as well. I think there's scope for both. Why can't you be both? You can have the bit of nastiness, yet, like, the best teams that we've ever seen in terms of the footballing teams, possession-based teams, have a bit of a nasty streak in them as well, or game management, if that's a better phrase.
And if they can adapt.
Yeah, of course. Like Man City, Rodri, Bernardo Silva, all these fellas, some of the best technical players you'll ever see, but they're quick to take a yellow card, or they're quick to drag someone down if someone's on the counter-attack. So I think that has to become part and parcel of your makeup anyway, Shane, and the group. I just think at the moment, and as I said, I was very hopeful about the group and all the things the manager had said up to that point. I think he's kind of let himself down as well off the back of that window because of the way he was speaking, the hype around it, the bullishness, the way he was speaking. The players were kind of echoing the same thing. We were starting to believe that.
But you want a bit of confidence.
Yeah, but not... But I thought they were... Like, there's a difference in confidence and bullish. They were bullish about their chances. Like, they were more or less saying, we're going to qualify here. We're like, this is... We're ready to go. This is our time. And that's fine if you go out and deliver that. It's like a boxer and all the chat in the build-up to a match. I'm ready. If he goes out and knocks the fella out, then he was ready. But if he loses after three rounds and gets knocked out, you're kind of saying, come on.
Well, hopefully there might be a knockout blow in Lisbon. In a green jersey. Because there could be plenty of knockout blows the other way.
Yeah.
One match in the SSE Artricity Men's Premier Division tomorrow. Plenty of drama in the First Division, actually, as well. Dundalk and Cove going for the league title. Dundalk could have it wrapped up tomorrow night, or it could go down to the final day where Cove host Dundalk. However, Shamrock Rovers could be crowned League of Ireland champions tomorrow. No Pico Lopez, no Lee Grace, no Josh Honohan, if Shells fans are trying to cut us on straws for that.
Go on, start reeling them off.
But they
start
are
reeling.
They are coming out off the back of a fairly assured performance in their semi-final.
You're some man for the scepticism, Shane. Come on.
Are Shamrock Rovers going to be crowned champions tomorrow night?
Yes.
Is it going to be a handy victory for
them?
No,
I don't think it'll be a handy victory, but a point is enough for them. Yeah. And I think Shelburne, to be fair, will give a good account of themselves. They've done very well, as we know, under Joy. And it's an important game for them as well. I know they have the European stuff going on at the moment, and they got off to a great start last week. But they've a game in hand on St. Patrick's Athletic, level on points with them, and they've two games in hand on Drogheda. So they will, as much as all the euphoria around Shelburne, as you well know, even more than me, Shane, over the last couple of years, has been absolutely fantastic to see them back at the level they're at. All the talk around the club in terms of investment and stuff that's going on, and underage and academy, and the U team is playing in the UEFA Youth League at the moment, and there's a lot of positivity, which is great to see. It's imperative that they finish in those European places. Because when you think of the money that they've already earned, what's on offer for kind of the reward for doing that, they have to, in terms of the league, that way they have to get into those positions, Shane. So I think that's why they'll be so kind of determined tomorrow night to go up to Tala, give a good account of themselves, potentially win. They'll be going up to try and win. I think you might see a start for Jack Henry Francis as well. He did very well in the European game when he came in. So they'll give a good account of themselves.
We shall see.
A draw.
Okay. Enjoy your trip to Cork tomorrow. Hopefully it is a good evening for both Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne and Tala, and indeed for the under-21s in Cork. Alan Colley, thanks. Jeff Shepherd's up next.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, earlier today, I caught up with Jeff Shepherd, who has his eye on America, especially the NFL this week.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Shep, let us begin our conversation with the New Orleans Saints. They earned their first win of the season, first home victory since November of last year, defeating the Giants 26-14. And it was revealed that some of the Saints players shed tears in the locker room when celebrating the week five result. Were there tears shed in the stands?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't cry in the stand, but I was excited, though. I mean, I thought they played really well. Look, I mean, the Giants aren't, a formidable team right now. But, I mean, I think you could basically say both teams are kind of in similar situations, except the Saints have a first-year head coach, a much younger quarterback. Now, the Giants did start Jason Dart, who's a rookie. But, I mean, Spencer Rattler, was 0-10 in his career in starts. And so he was in danger of going 0-11. But the defense played really well. They created five turnovers, and they got the first win for Kellen Moore. And so, it was an emotional time for a lot of the Saints players. You know, the old phrase, getting the monkey off the back, getting that monkey off their back. And it's just, it's an emotional release. You've been playing, this is week five. You've not had great results. Look, they played four games before the Giants game. They got blown out in Seattle. But the other three, they were pretty competitive in, including a game in Buffalo the week before. And so you're seeing kernels of a competitive football team week in and week out. It's, they host the Patriots this week, who are coming off their big upset win. So we'll see if we can, put two games in a row together.
Perhaps slightly bad news for yourself and for Saints fans. Current kicker isn't exactly shooting the lights out, which might be good news for our own Charlie Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I was texting some members of the Game On family on Sunday evening saying, Charlie better be warming up because Blake Groupie is made about six. I think he's made 66% of his kicks so far this season. He missed another one last week against the Giants. And look, there are certain teams in the leagues, the Lions, maybe the Bills, a guy misses a kick. It's not the end of the world. The team's still probably going to score 40 something points. I mean, the Saints are clawing in every single one of these football games. And so these picks matter. They all have mattered so far this season. So, it is the short life of a kicker. If you think you're indispensable, go out and have a couple of bad weeks in a row, and they'll find somebody else to do it.
Listen, I do want to pick your brain on a couple more on-field stories, but one very concerning off-field story. Two arrested, two suspects wanted after the home of Saints player Cam Jordan was robbed on the day of the game. Now, listen, I know we had Joe Burrows last year that was really well-documented. Is this a concerning rising trend?
Yes. I mean, obviously, amongst the players, it should be. And a lot of them are probably to the point they're going to need to start staffing their home with security when they go to the stadium. Look, it's public knowledge when they're not going to be at home, and it's also public knowledge what their salaries are. So, you put two and two together, and even the criminal element's going to figure out, okay, well, maybe it might be not a bad time to try to make a play here. And unfortunately, it's happened to a couple of, people in the NFL here, some high-profile players. Again, I think it's one of these things where they're going to have to start looking into private security, which is, a real shame that it's come to this.
Listen, only last week we were talking about the Bills and Eagles, and there was a narrative that could be a potential Super Bowl matchup. However, they both lost their unbeaten records. How much of a surprise was that for you?
I mean, I think it's a lot about, the parity in the league right now. Look, Buffalo, again, 2 weeks ago, did not look great against the Saints team that had just gotten destroyed in Seattle. And then they had to go into New England on Sunday night. That's a tough divisional matchup, with a quarterback in Drake May who is starting to put the pieces together. Actually, the game was in Buffalo. And then they had Stephon Diggs, his return, who played for so many seasons with the Bills, and he was amped up, and he had a big night as well. So I think part of that was just the trap game. Look, the Eagles, let's be honest, I mean, they should have lost to the Rams a couple of weeks ago. And then they had that bonkers blocked field goal in the last play of the game. They're struggling on offense. They're having internal issues between the wide receivers who don't think they're getting the ball enough, and they really aren't, but no wide receiver has ever thought that they've gotten the ball enough, Shane. As long as you followed football, you should know that by now. Mm. And what's going on with Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley? They've had an internal meeting this week to kind of mend some fences with, you know, Jalen Hurts and the wide receivers. They've got to get that sorted out. So you got to think this week they're going to try to feed A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and get them the ball more frequently. But that stuff is faster. And so I think that's kind of what's going on with both of those two teams. They're still very good. They're still going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to have any issues in their divisions. But I just think it's, you know, Buffalo's got to figure some things out on their defense right now, too.
The Chiefs also lost 2-3 for this season. They're not being very Chiefs-like. Although, is it fair to say they were unlucky regards to the dramatic manner of their defeat?
Yeah, Monday night's game was a shootout between the Chiefs and the Jaguars. And look, the last 2 weeks with getting Xavier Worthy back, the Chiefs have looked much better than they did in the first 3 weeks of the season. But Trevor Lawrence led the Jaguars on a big comeback Monday night. And towards the end of the game, he stumbled after taking the snap and fell down and got up and ran it into the end zone with 23 seconds left for the winning score. And the Jaguars have not really done a lot of things in a pretty manner this year, but they're 4-1, Shane, and you know that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs, who have looked better over the last 2 weeks, are still 2-3. Now, their division isn't killing things right now, although the Broncos did just go into Philly and win. But, you know, they're looking better, and they're going to get Rashee Rice back after this next game, and I think their offense will be even better after that. So I don't think it's panic time mode as much as it was a couple of weeks ago for the Chiefs. They're starting to put things together and looking like a semblance of their old selves.
You mentioned Broncos. So Broncos Jets this weekend in London. Broncos have Bo Nix firing, such a solid defense. Will this be one-way traffic at Tottenham?
I mean, look, the Jets defense is struggling. You know, here's an interesting stat. I know you're not going to like it since you've been following the Jets here, but if the opposing team scores 21 points or more, Justin Fields is winless in his career as a starting quarterback in the NFL. So the magic number for Denver this week is 21. If they can get to 21 points in London, historically they've had no issues with beating a Justin Fields quarterback team. But we shall see if they, you know, can put it together 2 weeks in a row. Bo Nix has kind of been a little off and on, which is really the Bo Nix experience. If you followed him through his college career at Auburn and eventually at Oregon, he's been wildly up and down. And Sean Payton is kind of seeing some of that, to start the season right now.
I did actually see an equally concerning stat as well. I must credit the BBC that since the NFL began tracking turnovers in 1933, the Jets are only the first team to be without a single takeaway through 5 games, which is kind of shocking when you think that Aaron Glenn was defensive coordinator at the Lions. But however, it's not been going great. They are yet to win a game. Listen, speaking of the Jets, the Dallas Cowboys owner, Jerry Jones, was fined $250,000 by the NFL for making now what they class as, and I suppose it is, an obscene gesture towards fans on Sunday. So the 82-year-old caught on camera raising his middle finger at the crowd during the Cowboys' win over the Jets at MetLife Stadium. Now, my favourite thing about this is Jones says he intended to put his thumb up instead and was signalling to his own supporters, not those of the Jets.
I mean, okay. I mean, really? I just, come on. I'm not going to take that at all.
Is look, $250,000 too much?
No, I mean, look, you're a grown man. You're worth billions of dollars. You own the team. Look, when you sent the note, you were, you know, I had seen what had happened already. But let me just tell you this right now. In all of the National Football League, if you would have just said an NFL owner got fined for flipping the bird at fans, everyone would know that it was Jerry Jones. Like, there's no second. Oh, maybe it was Gail Benson from the Saints. No, she doesn't do things like that. But Jerry Jones, he is the focal point of that franchise. He cannot help himself. He puts himself in the spotlight each week. It's ridiculous that the owner of a team is down on the field flipping off fans of the opposing team. It's absurd that we actually even have to address this.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It's fair, I suppose. That's a small change for NFL owners. I think we had the Panthers owner was fined $300,000 a couple of years ago, threw a drink on fans, and then the Titans owner Bud Adams $250,000 in 2009. So I suppose there is precedence there for gesturing at Buffalo Bills fans. Listen, Shep, before we let you go, anything else stand out last weekend for you, and also what excites you from what we haven't spoken about already this weekend?
Well, it's just a super time right now on the American sports calendar. You know, you've got the NFL in full swing, college football's in full swing, the Major League Baseball playoffs are going on. The Yankees got eliminated last night, so that's great. The Cubs, my team, got a win, their first win in their series with the Brewers, so they're going to try to pull even later tonight. You've got hockey starting up. I happen to be in Washington, D.C. right now. Shane and the Capitals played last night, not too far from the hotel we're staying at, so they were just... It's just a lot of excitement kind of all over America right now in the world of sports. It's just a fantastic time to be following things.
Game on.
Eye on America.
That is all we have time for this evening. Better the Silva is standing by with the new music show here in 2FM. Today's show was produced by Ronan Lawler. Our broadcast coordinator was Jarla Holland. So from all the Game On team, have a great evening. I'll speak to you again tomorrow at 6. Bye-bye.
This is 2FM.